Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Supertalk 99.7.
Well, we got President Trump, some big adjustments on immigration. We'll see if it goes anywhere. Why Jeff Flake is the media's new pet and what the media should be covering, but they're not. It's all this hour of the Dan Mandis program on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. This is from Red State. Of course, it's the story that Phil Valentine has been on for months. Imran Uwan, and apparently now there's talk of some sort of a congressional investigation, despite the fact that there has been an appalling, according to Red State, and I would agree, of course, and Phil has been pointing this out, an appalling lack of coverage. Think about it. This is a scandal, they say, in Red State that is said to have rocked the halls of Congress despite little mainstream media coverage. So we know all about Imran Uwan, right? This is a guy who was working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and a whole bunch of other, and she is, of course, Democrat out of Florida. She used to be head of the DNC. So this is a woman who you would think would know better. And to me, this is all wrapped up in scandal. There is no conspiracy about this, folks. There are some people that are trying to pass this off as conspiracy. No, this is corruption. There is something going on here. Spidey senses are up all over the place. So you know about this guy. And in case you don't know the story, I will recap it for you very briefly. The big question is, will there be a congressional investigation? Again, the guy's name is Imran Uwan, and he was an IT officer who was, again, working for the office of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And he also did work for a whole bunch of other Democrats as well. And so this is a guy who is the subject of a Capitol Police probe where he is accused of serious, potentially illegal violations on the House IT network. So bad, as a matter of fact, that they actually bounced him from access to the network for the Democrats. So he's not allowed anywhere on the servers for the Democrats. And so all of these other Democrats fired this dude way back in February. But listen to this. Debbie Wasserman Schultz kept him on the payroll until last Tuesday. So what does an IT officer, information technology officer, do if you're not allowed anywhere near the servers? So it begs the question, obviously, why is it did Debbie Wasserman Schultz keep this guy on the payroll? See, there's something going on. And I think Phil obviously knows it, and people within the Beltway in Washington, D.C., I believe that they are trying to figure it out. Now, you know, this guy had a couple of brothers and wives and everything else, and they also worked for members of Congress. So this guy moved out of his house in Virginia when he found out he was under investigation last February. So he rents the house out to a Marine Corps veteran and his wife, a naval officer, who found these mysterious hard drives in the home. And so apparently they tried to destroy these hard drives that were so important to Imran Uwan that he shows up back at the house to retrieve those hard drives. And the Marine in the home said, no, I'm not going to let you back into the house. You don't get these hard drives. As a matter of fact, the hard drives are now in the FBI's possession, which is a good thing. So this is, to me anyway, a major story and one that is baffling to me why it is not getting more coverage, because here you have an IT guy who is trying to destroy computers and he has been accused of serious, potentially illegal violations on the House IT network. And this guy had access to all kinds of information. And apparently that information was compromised. And so my question was, and this is all part of the investigation at some point, hopefully, was this guy careless or did he purposely expose the intel? Uwan, an IT staffer who has worked for many House Democrats and was employed by Wasserman Schultz, was allegedly at the center of a scheme that involved double charging the House for IT equipment, and yes, may have exposed House information online, according to Fox. So either he was horrifically bad at his job, or he was trying to do something far more nefarious. So we know the guy's dishonest, right? Because he was trying to double charge, he did double charge the House IT department for equipment. So we know he's dishonest, but what else is there? There's a lot here. This is a dude that made millions of dollars off the backs of taxpayers, frankly, and he had also declared bankruptcy. So this is one of those shifty guys. So now there is a criminal investigation perhaps getting going. But the biggest problem here for Debbie Wasserman Schultz is that she kept him on the payroll for, what, 4 or 5 months before he finally got arrested. Now, he got arrested at Dulles Airport there in Washington, D.C., and apparently what he was trying to do is he was trying to sell off and liquidate all of his stuff, including some properties. So he was leaving, and he was not coming back. He had already sent his wife and three kids back to Pakistan because this dude's from Pakistan. And so obviously the whole question that this brought to my attention, and I'm not the first one nor will I be the last one to say this, but this is a guy who was in charge of the intel for the Democrats, for a number of different Democrats, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz. He was in charge of the House IT and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And so why was this guy still on the payroll? That's one. And two, frankly, what took them so long to arrest him? I mean, this guy has been working for House Democrats for years. And yes, again, he declared bankruptcy back in 2012, but has made millions of dollars on the House payroll over at least a decade of work for various members. Now, you remember way back when, this was about, three, four months ago now, I think, when Debbie Wasserman Schultz started screaming up on Capitol Hill saying that one of her employees needed to get his laptop back, and if he didn't get the laptop back, there was going to be hell to pay? Well, she was talking about this guy. So why is she so concerned, one, about this guy getting his laptop back, and two, why is it that she kept him on the payroll? There's something fishy going on here. Says the 49-year-old who wants to make himself sound like a 109-year-old by using the term fishy. Moving on from there. This guy gets around, too. The Daily Caller has reported for months that Awan and his family have provided IT services for not just Wasserman Schultz, but a number of prominent congressional Democrats across key committees, such as the House Intelligence Committee. So how do you know this guy wasn't the guy that was given intel to WikiLeaks? How do you know that WikiLeaks wasn't getting this information and there was some sort of a process where this guy was selling intel? And I don't know. I'm just talking out loud here from all of the various articles that I've seen on places like Red State and other of these more conservative websites. You don't see this on ABC, CBS, or NBC. But how do you know this is not how WikiLeaks got all of that intel from the DNC? Now, I told you a couple days ago, Awan's attorney is blaming the media attention on anti-Muslim bigotry because this guy is from Pakistan. So now you've been updated on the story. There is something nefarious going on. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, we know about her. We know that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is crooked as the day is long. We know, for example, that she purposely went out of her way to marginalize Bernie Sanders to make sure that Hillary Clinton was the nominee for the Democrats. And so we know that she's somebody who does these kinds of things. So now Red State is asking this question. How long before there will be some sort of a congressional investigation? It's got to be quick. I mean, you would think that this is going to be, should be one of those things where if you've got an entire arm of Congress and all these committees that are investigating President Trump and so-called collusion on, you know, some evidence, but I would say that if it's been, what, a year and a half of investigations into Russian investigation and they haven't found anything, I would say perhaps the evidence is pretty flimsy. What about the evidence against Imran Awan? I mean, it seems to me there's a lot on this guy. So when does the congressional investigation begin? This is from Red State. Despite an appalling lack of coverage and some impressive attempts to turn the very real and very troublesome scandal into fake news, A watchdog group has now began demanding that Congress get to the bottom of the issue by putting the screws, as they say, to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Big question. Sounds like Congress, they report, has decided it might be time for them to get involved. This is from the Washington Free Beacon, and this was just tweeted out a few minutes ago by Red State. It's a quote. The extent of the potential breaches has been made more clear in recent weeks, according to one senior congressional source who would only speak on background when discussing the sensitive matter. They say the inexplicable nature of the conduct of Wasserman Schultz and others has broadened congressional interest. So can you imagine if Congress gets involved in this? Lawmakers are confused as to why Wasserman Schultz continued paying Awan and other staffers implicated in the breach for months after this information came to light. Well, it's because Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I'm assuming anyway, that she is crooked as the day is long. It wouldn't surprise me. So there is something deep on this. This is something that is deep and nefarious. They say at best for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, this is gross misapplication of public funds that could merit resignation alone. But the sources are saying inside Congress and inside the Beltway that there has got to be more to this story. And I think it's the unknown that people are dying to find out. I mean, to be perfectly candid, I'm not surprised that a Democratic, a guy that works for the Democrats, an IT officer, is crooked. It's not surprising that the guy was double charging the House for IT equipment. Quite frankly, I expect no less from the Democrats. But why was he left on the payroll? Again, you would think that I would know better. I shouldn't expect more from the Democrats. But I think this is far more than just a mistake. There is something. Either this guy was being paid off or this guy was blackmailing Debbie Wasserman Schultz. There's something. There is something. This is the guy that was in charge of the IT for the Debbie Wasserman Schultz and for a number of other Democrats. So what did he expose? Did he give WikiLeaks anything? Did he maybe conveniently leave a back door open so that somebody could go in and get the intel to WikiLeaks? I don't know. But the problem is that without any kind of a congressional investigation and with Debbie Wasserman Schultz refusing to talk, then the most anybody can do is ask a lot of questions. And the more questions that you ask, the uglier that it looks. So again, they say at best, this is gross misapplication of public funds that could merit resignation alone, but there's more to the story. The accused staffers are believed to have had access to sensitive intelligence information related to the House Foreign Affairs Committee, as well as lawmakers' personal information, prompting concerns the breach could be far deeper than initially suspected. And isn't that usually the case? So if there is some sort of a congressional investigation, the effort is likely to be led by the House Committee on Administration in tandem with the Speaker's office, according to the Free Beacon. So we'll have to see what happens there. They say as the scandal unfolds and potentially offers a look inside how the Democrats have been conducting business while they controlled the Hill for the last 8 years, Red State reports this. Remember, they could not have done it all without the help of their friends at the New York Times, and it goes on and on. So I think this is going to be even more explosive than anything that is related to President Trump, so-called collusion with his campaign and the Russians. We're going to have to wait and see. But the longer that Debbie Wasserman Schultz stays silent, the louder the questions and the more questions are asked. And so Phil Valentine certainly will have more information on this as the story continues to develop. And that is the intriguing story of Emron Uwan And hopefully by the time this guy goes to jail, along with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I'll be able to speak his name a little easier. It is 2:20 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Coming up next, why is Jeff Flake now the pet of the mainstream media? That story straight ahead on WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. To U.S. service members, why do I have a problem with that word every time? Take two.
Service members?
To U.S. Well, when I put it against
U.S. No, the problem
US,
is you've got U.S. Yeah. service members.
Two U.S. service members. There we go. Have been killed in Afghanistan. And three Tennessee district attorneys believe some clinics are making the opioid crisis worse. These stories more at 2:30 on WTN.
2:26 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. So why is it that Jeff Flake, Republican, is now the pet of the mainstream media? Well, because he is coming out against conservatives who are not calling out President Trump. Of course, Jeff Flake has a new book out, and here's what he has to say.
I think some things are more important than a political career. I think, yeah, it would have been probably politically smarter to wait until you're safely reelected to write a book like this. Mm-hmm. But then it wouldn't mean as much. Mm-hmm. If you don't have anything to risk politically, it doesn't mean as much.
Yeah, so the question he was asked is, okay, so why is it that you're coming out with this book bashing President Trump and bashing anybody who has an R anywhere remotely next to their name if they're not calling out President Trump? Jeff Flake is calling them hypocrites, and he's saying that Republicans need to take a stand against the president or, again, risk being called hypocrites. He says that he thinks in this book that his fellow party members are being complicit when they fail to call out President Trump on his conduct. Here's more from Jeff Flake.
I think some things are more important than a political career. Yeah. I think, yeah, it would have been probably politically smarter to wait until you're safely reelected.
Yeah, here's what I think. I think that Jeff Flake is going to run for president. That's what I'm thinking. Because one of the things that politicians do when they're getting ready to run for president or other offices is they will put out some sort of a comprehensive book on a lot of the things that they feel are part of what America should focus on as far as that upcoming presidential election. One of the things that Jeff Flake is more than likely, and I haven't read his book and I'm not going to, but one of the things that I'm sure that he's going to say is that Republicans are not living up to their traditional conservative values if they are supportive of President Trump. Here's more.
Where we've kind of, as Republicans, taken up an unfamiliar banner that this populism and in some cases xenophobia, anti-immigration, protectionism,
really?
That's not familiar to us. And I don't think that that is a governing philosophy.
So does anybody else feel insulted when Jeff Flake says, well, if you're supportive of Donald Trump, then you're anti-illegal, you're anti-immigration, you are xenophobic, you are nationalistic, and all of these other things. And I don't know about you, but when I first heard this audio, I did feel a little bit like he was calling out people who are Trump supporters as all of the things that he's mentioning. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm somebody that simply wants our immigration laws enforced. I want more of my money back, my paycheck, and less money in taxes. You know, we all know the reasons why people voted for President Trump, why conservatives voted for President Trump. So is he saying, is Jeff Flake saying that if you supported Trump, you are all of these things, that you are anti-immigration, that you are xenophobic? I think it's a very legitimate question.
So on the policy side, I think we have an issue. Also, being conservative means, particularly in foreign policy, that you're steady and that you're measured in your use of diplomacy and force and predictable, and that we embrace our allies and recognize our enemies. And that, I think, has been lacking, and I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, so clearly, at least to me, Jeff Flake is going to run for president against President Trump in the primaries ahead of the 2020 presidential campaign. And don't you know that he is getting all kinds of free or earned media from NBC, CBS, ABC, and certainly MSNBC. It's 2:30 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. .38 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. David writes, hey, Dan, I've run businesses for a lot of years, and it's pretty obvious to me that there was an affair going on between the dude from Pakistan, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. What a tangled web we weave.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That's what this dude throws down.
That's the first I've heard of that. Have you? Is that? I hadn't heard that.
Listen, anything. Wow. This goes back to what I said in the last segment, which is the less she talks, the more questions are being asked, and the more that people are sort of left to their own devices to think of why in the world would you keep this guy who is an IT guy, and he's banned from all the servers from back in February, and he just got fired in July. Why would Debbie Wasserman Schultz keep this guy on the payroll for all those many months, maybe as a consultant or whatever it is? But if she's not talking, well, then we all have to ask these questions. Plus, the guy, he is under investigation. They know that he tried to double the what he charged the Democrats mm-hmm. for these computer equipment, the IT equipment. We know that he had done a number of different things to compromise information within these various committees and the Democrats that he was working for. So we know that this guy was either nefarious or he was incompetent. I don't know which one it is. I'm assuming that he was really competent and he was also really good at being nefarious. So I don't know. But again, the more that there is silence from the mainstream media and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I think the more it's going to become a glaring silence. And we'll see what happens. And again, I know Phil will have even more perspective coming up after the news at 3:06. I covered it in the last segment. I love this story. Daily Caller. Al Gore's home here in Nashville devours 34 times more electricity than the average U.S. household. Now, here's the odd thing. The fact that Al Gore is a hypocrite does not surprise me. What does surprise me is that he still lives in Nashville. I didn't realize he still had a home here. But apparently, we know that this coming Friday, Al Gore's sequel to An Inconvenient Truth comes out. Well, apparently now we're finding out, thanks to the Daily Caller, that Gore burned through. Listen to these numbers. Because again, the headline, Al's home devours 34 times more electricity than the average U.S. household. This is a guy who is always screaming about conserving energy. Well, apparently he wants it all for himself. In the past year, Gore burned through enough electricity to power the typical American household for more than 21 years, according to a new report by the National Center for Public Policy Research. The former VP consumed 230,889 kilowatt hours at his Nashville residence, which includes his home, a pool, a driveway, entry gate, and all these other kinds of things. A typical family uses an average of 10,812 kilowatts of electricity per year. So let's round this up. Al Gore's home, 230,000 kilowatt hours. The average American household home, 10,000. Last September, Al Gore devoured almost close to 31,000 kilowatts of electricity. That is enough to power 34 average American homes for a month. Over the last 12 years, Gore used more electricity just heating his outdoor swimming pool than six typical homes use in a year. So, yeah, again, I'm not surprised that Al Gore is a hypocrite. I'm more surprised that he still graces us with his presence here in Middle Tennessee. Okay, gosh, Jeff Sessions. I want to plow through a whole bunch of topics here because I don't want to end the hour and end the show with a lot of topics that I did not get to. Jeff Sessions, apparently on Friday, is going to announce a major crackdown on leakers this week. In the latest sign, the administration is pushing to run a tighter ship as John Kelly seizes the reins as White House Chief of Staff. Now, let's face it. We know that one of the big reasons why the Trump administration has been having such an incredibly hard time is obviously because of the leaks. And Reince Priebus wasn't able to get it done because the president said he was weak, weak, weak. So is Jeff Sessions, by saying that he wants to apparently start locking up these folks to try and keep them in line, is he responding to the criticism that President Trump was leveling against him in the last several weeks. Could be. So Sessions plans to hold a press conference on the leaks on Friday. We'll certainly watch that for you, what, day after tomorrow. The announcement may provide more of an overview of what the Department of Justice hopes to accomplish rather than specific prosecutions at this stage. Listen to these numbers. I saw this last night. I was shocked. Last month, a report written by Republicans on the Senate's Homeland Security panel warned the Trump administration faced an alarming amount of media leaks that posed a potential threat, and we know this, to national security. The 24-page report is titled State Secrets: How an Avalanche of Media Leaks is Harming National Security. Apparently, the president has had at least one leak per day since he became president of the United States. Now, I'll give you one very brief example, one very quick example. It's one that we talked about. You remember in the hours after the Manchester, England terrorist attack at the Ariana Grande concert, right? And so we all know that in the hours that followed, the police there and the authorities in England, they took pictures of the crime scene. And so apparently somebody within our own intelligence agencies leaked the name of the attacker and also all of the different kinds of tools that he used to carry out the attacks. And so all of a sudden you had all of these accomplices just scurry because the New York Times, I believe it was the New York Times, came out with all of his intel. That's what they mean when they say that these media leaks are harming our national security. So Sessions has to do something. Trump also slammed Sessions, remember this, for not being tougher on leaks from the intelligence community, saying, I want the attorney general to be much tougher. This was last week. So this might be a situation where Jeff Sessions is responding to the criticism that President Trump has been leveling at him, of course, as we all know, on Twitter. And this may be a situation where Jeff Sessions is trying to save his job. So we'll keep you updated on that story as well. You know, one of the things that I find fascinating is the reaction to news stories. And I'm watching all of the reaction to the biggest news story of the day, which I covered extensively in the first hour. And that is the fact that President Trump wants to slash legal immigration by something like 50%. And certainly Phil is going to talk about this as well. But, and Bell, if I could have some audio here. This is President Trump earlier endorsing the legislation to limit legal immigration. And I'll give you some of the details.
The RAISE Act will reduce poverty, increase wages, and save taxpayers billions and billions of dollars. It will do this by changing the way the United States issues green cards to nationals from other countries.
Yeah. Yeah, the legislation would mark a major shift in U.S. immigration laws. And what he really wants to do is he wants to be a little bit more discriminatory. Did I use the word discriminatory? Well, yes, I did, but this is in a different way. We need to be more selective as to who we allow into this country. So within this idea that the president has is that they want to accept people based on almost like a merit system, if you will. So in other words, can they speak English? What's their education level? What are their job skills? The senators that he is working with on this proposal, they're saying that this is modeled after immigration programs in Canada and Australia. So isn't it funny how you got all these people on the left who will praise Canada's healthcare system, but not their immigration system, apparently. And on the in the first hour, I got so much reaction on my rant in the first hour about people who have been in this country for years and years, and they don't speak English. And I know that that is, at this point in time, that's almost a given. And so I don't bother to talk about that much anymore because that's one of those conversations that we've had a bazillion times. But I was watching a video. It was a news video last night, and it was a video based out of Texas, and they're speaking to this woman who was the victim of some sort of a crime. And they said that she'd been in this country 7 years, yet she's speaking in Spanish through an interpreter. And my comment was, okay, so why is it that she's been here for 7 years and she doesn't speak English? I mean, why is that so difficult to understand why conservatives would be upset with that? So I think this is a great idea. Now, we know, and there have been studies done on this, and if I had more time, this came up right in the beginning of my show. But we know that a lot of these folks that come into our country legally and illegally, they end up on all kinds of benefits. Well, if the president is saying, let's not bring people in who don't know how to speak the language, who cannot contribute to our culture and our society. Let's bring in people that can contribute, that do care enough to learn English. I mean, think about it this way. Let's say you're a 13-year-old and you're in Mexico, and you have the dream of one day coming to America. If you know that there are certain requirements to come into America, like knowing English, like getting the absolute best education that you can and learn some job skills so that you can contribute to the country that you love so much that you've been pining to go to for so long, well, then that 13-year-old who is stuck in Mexico is going to learn English. He is going to do what he can to become smarter, become more attractive to people who are ultimately going to be making the decision as to whether or not he will be issued a green card, for example. So I think this is huge. And of course, we've got the usual hysteria coming from the left. One critic says this: this is just a fundamental restructuring of our immigration system, which has a huge implication for the future. As I said in the first hour, well, yes. Kevin Appleby, Senior Director of International Migration Policy for the Center of Migration Studies. This does have huge implications for the future, good implications for the future. He says this is part of a broader strategy by this administration to rid the country of low-skilled immigrants they don't favor in favor of immigrants in their image. So I guess the question would be, and I would pose this to Kevin Appleby, listen, if we're going to accept immigrants into this country, and we know that this is part of the American way, we bring immigrants into the country, what is wrong with wanting the best immigrant possible? And when I say the best immigrant possible, I mean ones that can contribute. Now, the big question is, will this pass? According to the Washington Post, its chances of passing are narrow. We know the Republicans hold a narrow majority in the Senate, and it's going to have difficulty getting to 60 votes to prevent that filibuster. The legislation is expected to face fierce resistance from Democrats, obviously, immigration rights groups, obviously, and opposition from business leaders and some moderate Republicans in states with large immigrant populations. Obviously, you've got Jeff Flake and also John McCain, both from Arizona, both supposedly Republicans, and there's no way that they, especially John McCain, Mr. Amnesty, Mr. Pro-Illegal Immigration, there's absolutely no way that John McCain will sign off on this bill. So the big question is President Trump, knowing that there is no way that this particular bill would be able to pass the Senate, maybe he's setting up the Senate to fail. Maybe he's smoking out the rhinos even more. It's 252 on Supertalk 99.7 WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. Diane Black says she's not stepping down from the House Budget Committee, and the mooch says it was a joke. He's just kidding. When he called Reince Priebus a schizophrenic.
Hey, did you hear
the story coming up?
Apparently, there was some sort of a rumor going around that he and Kimberly Guilfoyle, is that how you say her name, from The Five and Fox News, that they were some sort of an item.
Oh.
Rumor was out there. Now, he says that that is not true.
But he is going through a divorce.
He is going through a divorce, and I don't even know the details of the divorce. There's all kinds of murky, muddy details.
Right. Page six kind of stuff.
And I've lost interest in the mooch. I would like to thank the mooch for a couple of days of really good talk radio, but other than that, I don't know what's going to be next for the mooch. We do know that the guy who had the pleasure of having Chris Christie six inches from his face at that baseball game. And Bell, if you could play the, thank you very much. The guy that had Chris Christie 6 inches from his face, guy's name was Brad Joseph, and this was a picture and a video that went viral where Chris Christie was called a hypocrite and all these other things by Brad Joseph and other people at the Milwaukee Brewers Chicago Cubs game. So Christie turns around, gets in his grill. Well, the guy is now challenging Chris Christie to some sort of an MMA fight.
That's awesome. Trying
to extend his 15 seconds of fame is Brad Joseph. And this is why Chris Christie just should not be bothered with these kinds of people. Phil Valentine is up next. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.